Good morning, and welcome to all of the honorable members and the Director General of DIRCO, and guests, your delegation, and can we have DG, can we have order behind you, please? Can we have order? Okay. And then, of course, welcome to your delegation as well, DG, and guests in attendance. Members, we will be focusing on the strat plan, the APP, and of course the quarterly report. Now, as you would know, approval of the strat plan is a requirement for going to the budget vote of the department. So what we will not do, we will do as we normally do, have the presentations, interrogate them, compile the committee report, have engagements on the issues, and if necessary, call the department to clarify some of the issues that we may want them to clarify at that point, and then do the approval, and then go to the budget vote. That is the process, as we all know. Perhaps I should just also say, announce that, make a very important announcement about a certain honorable member who has been duly appointed as the whip of the committee. The Honorable September. I hope you're listening, Honorable Ngonyama. I don't want you to be confused, Tata. No, that's fine. It's okay. It's okay. I just want you to hear that we have a whip following the departure of Mahau, and you were talking to the whip next to you. Yes, indeed. So, congratulations, Honorable September, and of course you won't have a lot of whipping to do because this committee has been quite disciplined. Well, I hope so. Okay, now thanks so much. Okay, so without further ado, I'll hand over to the Director General give us the briefing, whereupon we'll then engage. May I also just for the benefit of those who didn't go, say that we've had a very interesting and insightful and worth fact-finding mission to Israel and Palestine, we of course will have the opportunity to engage at a later stage on the contents of that particular on the substance of the visit and so on, and share the rest with the honourable members. And then, plot the way forward from there. But thankfully, it was a visit without incidents, save for one member who was almost declared persona non grata for having the wrong surname. You know, Suleiman is not a very popular surname these days. if you travel, it's not a popular surname. So you might want to consider, Msuli. Yeah. You might want to consider a change of surname. I think Magama also would do you well. Yeah. So, but thank you so much, honourable members. May I also add, lastly, that we've had maximum discipline amongst the honourable members, unparalleled commitment and dedication to the task, working long hours, and so on. I've noted that. Look, even at night, we were working. We were really working. But thank you so much. Thank you so much. Now, without further ado, now this time around, DG, I leave it in your capable hands.
Thanks, Honourable Chair Magama, and thanks, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, and may we also congratulate you, Honourable Dua, for being the whip of the committee. Chair, with me, I have colleagues accompanying me who will help me to deal with the task assigned to us. I have on the immediate left the Acting Chief Corporate Services and CFO, Mr. Ramasha. He's the one dealing with money, books, and everything. Next to him, we have DDG Mahwai with HR, and with Ian Baston, Chief of Staff in the DG's office. Of course, you know Peter Kutsiev. Honourable Chair, before I start, let me again thank you for giving us the chance to interact with the committee, and I'm sure there are fellow diplomats behind, not accidental diplomats, I think that fellow diplomats behind. You are welcome here. Chair, I'm sure the committee have two documents that have been distributed and tabled already in February. You have the stretch plan 2013-2018 and the annual performance plan 2013-2014. So this is going to be the context which will be operating. Chair, needless to say that our stress plan is based on the marching orders in the cabinet medium-term strategic framework, and we normally follow the delivery agreement outcome 11. So we have not changed since last year in that directive. And normally we get the president's speech, vision of the speech. We get the cabinet decisions, and we all integrate this into the plan. As I say, on our stress plan, which we have tabled before. Chair, I must also indicate that the structure of the department has not changed. It's still the same structure. Still minister, deputy minister, the chief. Nothing has changed in that area. However, we are going through what they call organizational functional assessment as per the directive of the Minister of Public Service. So when changes do come, we'll come to the committee for that. But Chair, what we thought we should do, because of the report, both stress plan and take you through some of our APP and the quarterly report, I will make some presentation and the colleagues will add on the more details regarding the stress plan as requested. But needless to say, Chair, is that we wanted to share with you this environment. But our stress plan is there, but we live in a very fast-changing global environment. So I thought that maybe that could be the area where we start. In a stretch plan, Chair, in the APP or so, we report on this program. First administration, international relations, international cooperation, public diplomacy and protocol services, and health transfer. This is what our stretch plan is all about and is based on. So we need to reflect on this. Chair, if we have to reflect, part of the stress plan is based on our understanding of the environment in which you are operating. In the document that you have, that you'll find that I think it's referred to on the page after you have high-level plan. on page 13, the summary on the stress plan. We are requested to provide situational analysis. And most other departments of government, internationally, they use this. Now, Chair, we live in a global environment characterized by a major shift in global political, social, economic, and cultural dynamics. That include the new economic powers, new media and social networks, environmental change, heightened demand for scarce resources, changing nature of conflict and insecurity. The new economic powers influence the balance of global distribution of power, starting in the formation of new political and economic groupings. So even if we have this 2013-2018 perspective, in this period, you will see certain changes taking place. So I want to say to the oral members that although we talk about stress plan 2013-2018, there will be things that will influence the content and direction during this period, and we need to be projecting from time to time on these changes taking place. The challenging the established political and economic order and placing pressures on international organizations to reflect new realities. South Africa and African economies increasingly linked to these new economic powers. You saw at the BRICS summit when we brought the African heads of state with this new economic power. This is what I'm saying about. Proliferation of regional and preferential trading blocks leading to increased intra-regional trade, but with exclusion of the others. Globalization continues to shape the world, notwithstanding the global economic crisis. The convergence of information platforms, globalized media and social networking has a major impact on governance, economic activity, and mobilization across social, cultural, and religious and national boundaries. MENA region. Nevertheless, we are saying that we have not seen the end of these changes, and that will influence our first plan going forward. The Middle East remains in turmoil. I'm glad that Honorable Mogama says they were in the Middle East recently. Still remains in turmoil, exhibited by the Arab uprising, primarily in the North Africa, Bahrain, Syria, Yemen. The oil-rich countries of the Gulf are addressing concerns about the impact of the regional developments may have on them through a massive increase in social spending. Many military conflicts continues in the Syrian Arab Republic, and it's expected that post-conflict Syria will be characterized by social upheaval and sectarian violence, including the region. Iran remains isolated in the face of perceptions that they are playing a destabilizing regional role. International sanctions against Iran will remain until the country has made significant concessions to its nuclear program. That's our reading. The natural and man-made disasters are impacting on all aspects of human development, particularly food security. This is a major concern in the perspective of 2013-2018, the question of food security. Conflict between environment and development clearly visible in climate change negotiations. And there is an increasing resource-driven competition, including those in Africa. Debt crises give rise to deep divisions between Northern and Southern Europe over the future of economic policy, stimulation through increase in debt versus austerity. It's an ongoing debate that we are all aware of. Rising nationalistic tendencies in Europe, this is our major, major worry, is this nationalistic tendencies now in Europe. In Asia, increasing tension over disputed territories in South China Sea. The situation between two Koreas remains tense since the testing of a nuclear device by DPRK on 12 February 2013 and joint military exercises between the U.S. and South Korea. The U.S. is shifting some of its military assets to Asia to counterbalance China, particularly Navy and Air Force. This is our reading when we look into the deployment of the Armada in the South China Sea and the neighboring areas. China's economy is the largest in the region, second in the world after the U.S. However, growing concern over the debt of local governments, which have reached $1.2 trillion in China. Japan is using quantitative easing to stop deflation and make Japanese export more competitive. It's our major market, honorable members, the Japanese market. In fact, in most major economies, that is where we have surplus trade, is with Japan. So we are watching closely what is happening to that market as we plan. The environment of the global governance system remains under threat from unilateralist tendencies as well as gradual erosion of multilateral programs. That is why we see all later on in our stretch plan, we say part of our work should be to strengthen multilateral systems. Global economic, financial, food, energy, and other crises add to the burden of developing countries in addressing poverty alleviation, inequality, and employment creation. This global rebalancing of power and influence has been taking shape for decades, but has been accentuated by the global economic and financial crisis that cannot be resolved bilaterally. The multilateral arena has thus become the primary area of contestation. The African continent has seen a significant advances in democracy, albeit some reversals in other parts of the continent. And good governance is demonstrated by the increasing number of credible elections. It's still a fragile process, but we hope it's going to hold. The other significant threat to stability on the continent is the rise of terrorist groups such as Al-Shabaab, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, and Lord's Resistance Army. The economy on the continent has shown strong growth in recent years, and Africa is accepted as the new global growth region or point. However, political instability inhibits the continent from reaching its full potential. There has been greater efforts in integrating the various economies in Africa through negotiations of inter-regional blocs like COMESA, EAC, SADC, Treaty. Peace and security challenges persist in DRC, in Nigeria, in Mali, in Cote d'Ivoire, in Sudan, in Cam, Somalia, and others. So we are mindful that although there are some advances, we have these challenges that we talked about in the last meeting. Unconstitutional change of government continue, and armed secessionist groups continues to be a threat. We talk about Mali and Nigeria. Another members recall the last meeting that we had, even when we were in Pretoria, talking about some of these issues. The Human Development Index in Africa, very low, and will continue to hamper economic development and poverty alleviation. The continent is unlikely to meet its MDGs. It's a known story, and that's why we're saying to the developed countries, rather than concentrate on the post 2015 MDGs, let's talk about what we can do in the next 2 years to meet the MDG goals. Emerging economies like BRICS are causing a paradigm shift amid an ongoing world economic crisis, and issues like the BRICS Development Bank could further accelerate African development. I think we have received a lot of reports about this issue, and I know Honorable Chair and others were in the BRICS meeting. Now, in our planning perspective, that's what I think in our first plan, we've observed some few things in the world that want to share with our members. This is how we provision was in 1980, 14 years before the democracy in South Africa. And these have had a big impact on the development since then. This is how it looks like now. You can see the size of those points in 1980, and you see how they balloon in 2011. Now, that is part of the impacting on the changes that we look at. This is how the global GDP was in 1990. I'm saying this around members because in the first plan we talk about 2018. So you see this kind of shift. The EU accounted for 33% of the global GDP in 1990, India 1%, China 2%, Russia 2%, Brazil 2%, United States 26%, Japan 14%. South Africa, you know, about 1%. But in 2011, look at how the picture has changed. The EU was 33, now is 25. China was 2, 1990, then is 10, 2011. US was 26, 1990, it came down to 21 in 2011. Brazil from 2 to 4, India from 1 to 3. Now, this is why we are saying, honorable members, in the stress plan, when you look towards 2018, from 2011 to 2018, you see yet another shift. And
I can't see the figure.
They are not in the...
Yeah,
no, they're very small. Okay, even there, it is difficult there.
Yeah, I can't see them, can't see anywhere.
Yeah, maybe we should ask if you can do something about this and resend it to the members in a much bigger form, maybe.
But it's though we can improve that, because part of our planning is really based on...
Yeah.
Is there no way we can adjust this thing to be slightly...
But
the system
of what you're saying, we understand,
yes. Okay. But it could have been even more if this was visible. Even in the slides you have.
Even worse.
Slide 3 on the page.
Oh, they make mine better.
Yeah.
I have mine then. No, this one is really. I wish it was like this because it's more visible. Now, okay, let's share with
you. You can follow the.
The arguments. Okay. So I was making this point to say what is going to influence our planning going forward, honourable members. Okay. So this is what we're thinking about. Now, look at the that's all you can see. Look at the GDP in dollars. G7 versus BRICS. That one is visible on the board, I think you can see. In 2010, the G7 had 31.8% of the GDP, BRICS 14%. In 2020, it's going to be almost the same, more or less. But 2030, so by the time it comes to 2018, in our planning, they'll be around 35, 36, 36, 36. They'll be almost the same when we end our stretch plan 2018. When you go to 2030, according to our NPC, the picture would have changed. This is how it will be looking like the GDP of in terms of trillions of dollars. G7 55, BRICS 84. So it is this kind of world. I wanted to argue, honourable members, that is going to impact on the 2013-2018 stretch plan. So that when we annually here with our APPs, we make adjustments, honourable members will know that we have taken them along with us. This is just projection that we have, but you know anything can change. But we thought that we should remain with that. Now, in terms of the global share of the GDP, those are just the numbers of the trillions of dollars. From 1980 to 1995, the BRICS countries accounted for 10% of the global share of the GDP. 2010-25. In 2050, it will be about 40% of the GDP. So when we come towards 2018, it will be more or less around 30-32% of the global GDP. So we'll be talking about a different world. This is global shipping routes as we see them. I want to show there are congestions between the Atlantic, cross Atlantic, Europe and America. Just from the map, just see the kind of networks. And then the Pacific outside. The Pacific, so you can see where the global trade. If you look on the extreme right of Australia and the left of USA, that is the Pacific. That is the global network of shipping. It is not very clear. If the numbers were clear, I could explain better on what influences that configuration of the shipping and why I want to share with our members this global shipping routes. Because at the heart of it, look at South Africa. Look at South Africa there. And we see increasingly that South Africa is going to have more and more. You see more networks in there because of the problem around the Suez Canal. So you'll see more and more the route there. which means in the 2013-18 perspective, we need as a government, as a whole, we need to reposition the southern part of South Africa to play a major role in global political. We argued 10 years ago for government to increase investment in Cape Town, Durban, Port Elizabeth, East London, in Richards Bay, and now Kuga. And we say as we project ahead, we see that by 2013-14, there will be increasing utilization of our ports, including transshipment possibilities. Now, in terms of the IMF again, it's a pity it's not very clear. I just wanted to share with the global trade linkages. I'm saying this thing, honorable members, because we need to relocate ourselves firmly on global trade. We are a trading nation, and therefore we should be watching more and more these trends and developments. Now, I don't want to emphasize this issue that I've done with the previous maps in terms of the rise of the GDP of the BRICS countries and the new area. Now, we are here now in BRICS. But I think in the stress plan 2013-18, you will see new grouping having an impact on global affairs. And that is where we are. And we have been invited to this group called CIVIS, you know, the CIVIS group, Brazil, I mean this one, Colombia, for C, I, Indonesia, V for Vietnam, Egypt, E, T, Turkey, and S, South Africa. Now, this is a very interesting grouping of countries, the CIVIS. And we have to watch that as TERCO. Why? Because these are moving towards a $1 trillion GDP economies. Beyond BRICS, these are the next group of countries where we need to deploy resources to open up more markets and linkages. So this 2013-2018 strategic plan perspective takes into account that in the fifth administration, 2014-2019, we'll have to deal with this new groupings. We've been invited to a meeting already in Colombia. We sent a team there to come and discuss with them. The question that we'll then have to discuss is IPSA, BRICS, and CIVIS. Where does South Africa belong and what do we need to play? As I say, these are the part of the stretch plan 2013-2018. But I wanted to bring you nearer home, Africa. This is the GDP in Africa. You can see 1990, the African GDP. You can then see by 2011, it has crossed $1.2 trillion US dollars. So there is a growth, phenomenal growth in the African GDP. And it should be part of this growth. This is the per capita income in Africa. Marginal development, not in line with the growth of GDP. Now, we chose some few African countries just to share with honorable members our reading and how the World Bank came to this thing. Sub-Saharan Africa, we look at Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa, Uganda, and Zimbabwe. Because this could be, if you add Angola, this could be some of the key countries that might drive the African logical. But we just take the GDP from 1991 to 2011. You could see this continuous rise of the GDP. And then, as diplomats, naturally, part of the role of DERCO is to assist the government with investment, trade, et cetera, et cetera. So the government have resources to meet the domestic challenges. That's how the interaction of foreign policy and domestic policy. So as DERCO works, we should be mindful of, does the government have the resources to meet its own domestic challenges? And therefore, like the conference we had last week, what direction do we give to the ambassadors to what work must they do to make sure that indeed the state have resources to meet the challenges. And what we said to them, we said, look at 1994, the budget of South Africa. And look where the budget is, 2013. It is unprecedented in modern times. So that you can have such a phenomenal budget increase in a matter of 18, 19 years. That you can move from 150 billion to almost 1.1, 1.2 trillion budget in a given country. So the question then we say, what will happen, what will be the budget looks like in 2018 in our strategic plan perspective? And therefore, the role of diplomats, that's why we shift more and more towards economic diplomacy, because we have to open up markets for more exports, we have to attract more investment, we must go value add. So then there's a convergence between our DIRCO planning and the EPAP 3 in terms of beneficiation, in terms of the creation of more jobs. So we have to go and look for partners to come in beneficiation, technologies to come to infuse here. So then there is this, can I say, cooperative, there is this a joint approach into our work. So that, as I was saying, portfolio committee also should be very mindful that diplomats have to make sure that at all times we come to the party in terms of meeting government responsibilities to our citizens. So this is the GDP at the current prices of South Africa. You can see GDP have really grown to a great extent. We need to raise the GNI of South Africa. We need to move. It has been going on, but I think we could have done even more, what you call. In terms of trade, look at the green bar, the red and the blue bar. There is a lot of work that we need to do. Yes, of course, around $3 trillion, but look at the gap between import and export. Hence, to DIRCO, EPAP 3 makes a lot of sense that you need to go beneficiation so we can increase more value add into our product. Now, this is where we export, according to SARS, in the West. The EU used to account for 42% of the African export destination. Now it is at 27%, because the major chunk now goes to BRICS, SADC, and Japan and the U.S. Now look at the CBIT. CBIT is 2%. That's why I say, honorable members, if we have to increase export, hopefully then will lead to more revenue collection. We need to make sure that we deploy resources on the CBIT economies for us to move. These are just some of the 10 exports that you are working on. Because if we go to value add in the next 6 years, we need to change the composition of this import. We have to import less. We have to do more here at home. And also the question of the export. We have to export, I think, less. Now, in the, as I say, export, I think I'm going through the export. We need to say now, if you take platinum, the third one, and gold, you must be saying it's no longer gold. We should be exporting finished products, not platinum, platinum products. And that's a type of orientation where we're going, coming back. I'm going to leave this move to the issue of the tourism. When 1994, honorable members, we had about 3.8 million arrivals in South Africa. Last year, we moved almost towards 9.5 million arrivals. So again, you can see this change from 1994 to 2011, 2012. But we know that by 2018 we can double this number of arrivals. If we work between now and 2018, it is possible that we can double this number of arrivals. But very significant is SADC. Where did they originate? I think many South Africans forget that by and large, most of the people who come there come from our own region. They come from our own region. Most people arrive in South Africa. Do we have appropriate facilities for them at the point of entry in the city? Do we take care of them? I think South Africans see them mostly as irritation, not as a resource. We see arrivals from Europe, from US, from Japan and others as the most important resource. But the people who run part of our hotels, part of economy, we don't see them as a resource. We are learning from Thailand. Why Thailand have such resources, facilities for their own Asian arrivals there. So this is an issue that we really need to look at. Now, honorable members, in 1994, we have 36 missions abroad. 36 missions abroad. Some of us who arrived in Virgo 1994, we went through these missions one by one and say, why do you have these 34 missions? Where? What are they doing? The idea was that when you plan expansion, there must be a solid case why a mission is open, what is to be expected. We moved to 2002 missions. Now we have 126 missions. Honorable, can you go recall back the GDP, the budget, 1994, and the budget now? Recall the GDP, 1994, and now. Recall the export, 1994, and now. You will see a clear investment in terms of missions. Missions are investment centers. Missions are investment centers. They are the forward outposts to interact with the world, but to open up opportunities for the country. So when missions are open, it is not because we like them. It's because we are investing something to get a return on the missions. So we like the honourable members to have us explain this issue to the Parliament that. I'm not sure, honourable members, by 2018 how many we have. But there was a cabinet decision that we should open a mission in each and every African country. We have not reached that. We have 47 in Africa now. We have not reached 54 as yet. In the civil countries, there is a country where we don't have a mission, Colombia. And if you look at the Latin American economy, Colombia is very, very substantial. The question is, in this 2013-2018 planning, are we not going to put a mission in Colombia? Perhaps by reorganizing in other parts of the world, you know, downsize missions and move resources there. If indeed Colombia will be part of the BRICS of tomorrow, why don't we then shift the resources? Take Bangladesh, 150 million people. We don't have a mission there in Bangladesh. I think there will be, in some of those countries we are looking at, the markets of tomorrow. They might be poor today, but history has taught us that in poverty lies potential value to be exploited. India was very poor 2 years ago, but everybody goes to India today. China was forgotten. Everybody goes to China today. So we're not poor permanently. So it's something that, honor members, I think we have to watch at. GDP of the countries hosting South African missions. This is where we are in the world, honourable members. You can see you are almost in every part of the world. Rightfully so, because we wanted to have our ears on the ground. We wanted to make sure that as you're this regional. I said earlier on that you see this sub-regional trade configurations because of the failure of the WTO. So if the global system fails, then regional arrangements takes place. But we have to be in all this because of the reconfiguration of the of the world, what you call, economies. Now, on Program 1 administration, we have Rama Wai here. I don't know whether you want to talk about it, but in just summary, you can look at that. And then we have, of course, the question of finances, which you have also in the, what you call that, and I will ask, it's in the APP, but it's also the funds are reflected in the document. This is the voting that 13, 14, 15, that will be taken to the Parliament, honorable members, when the minister gives her vote speech 30th of May. This is how the figures are as of now, and the projections for tomorrow. That number is in the details are in the APP, not on the, if you, honorable members have the APP documents, that is where the figures are. But we have more details, and Mr. Ramashao can give honorable members more. We have gained money. We're supposed to have less money. But because of the work DIRCO is doing, I think the Treasury was very kind to us. But I'm sure it was the honorable members who have been lobbying. We got the additional, we're supposed to reduce our baseline by minus 1%. It has increased by a percentage point. We'll have the details of this. I will call Mr. Ramashao to take other members of Parliament on how we came to this. Human resources, Mr. Mahwai is here. Just in brief, this is we are asked by the government to present strategy of filling vacancies. At present, it takes 0.7.9 months to fill a vacancy. We are now moving strategy towards 4 months. And we signed an agreement that this time around, unlike last year, we'll have 100% performance agreement signed and appraisals made. And if you recall last year, we were dancing around 99.9%. We just said, no, it must be 100% this time around. In terms of grievances, and within 30 days, we are among those departments that have so far dealt relatively well. We have 19 cases that have been lodged in 2013. DDG Mahai will talk about that. In the training, I emphasize the question of economic diplomacy and the skills for our diplomats, so they can interact in that world that you talked about, including question of languages. You cannot play a role in this world if you cannot communicate and speak the language. That was program one. Program two, international relations, is exactly what I was saying. But to be more specific, we are going to have a very busy year this year with so many structured bilateral relations mechanisms, joint commissions, trade investment seminars, state visits. Just this month, we've seen the president moving all over, and people are coming here. There is an increased visit by heads of state, to South Africa. So it's not going to be less this year. Instead, I think we'll see more and more. This year, as I said, our missions are planning numerous activities during the course of this year, and we are now perfecting the economic diplomacy training and implementation going forward. We are also getting more and more training opportunities abroad to skill our people beyond DIRCO. These are just examples of some of the high-level interactions that will be taking place in the current day. They are there for honorable members to look at. Some of the most important visits of the year, where our president will be going, or heads of state coming. And then in terms of third program, multilateral diplomacy. Minister now is in New York. She arrives. She's going to arrive this afternoon. Been requested by the Secretary General of the United Nations to come and interact on the issues that they think South Africa normally takes lead in terms of peaceful resolution of conflicts and in terms of creating some mechanism to deal with the issue of conflict. We just share with the honorable members some of the major engagements that will be taken. This honorable members is going to increase as we move along towards 2018. It's going to increase precisely because there is a sense in the world that more and more needs to come from South Africa and from some countries in the continent. We have to assume more and more responsibilities and obligations. It's something that we are discussing closely as to what kind of responsibilities we must assume, and do we have the resources to do that? Because this resource doesn't come. You have an envelope. We must have an envelope to do some of those responsibilities. We are in a peace building commission, so we are expected to play a role more and more on these issues. We are in disarmament, nuclear issues. There's going to be a review of nuclear disarmament because people want a new. There was a very successful conference early in the year, but there is still a big concern about the proliferation of nuclear devices all over the world. So we are expected as South Africa to be part of this movement to creation towards a nuclear-free world. We hope it is achievable in our lifetime. Some say it is not, but I think we are all concerned when we see pockets of nuclear capabilities, especially weaponization in some parts of the world. I want to move to a situation where I want to request my colleague, Mr. Ramashao, to take you along the budget, where the budget is, and what we need to do about that. Needless to say that there is the issue of Zimbabwe that we're preparing now to deploy in Zimbabwe. We're estimating that it should be around 80 people. We want to deploy, if possible, a month or two before the election in Zimbabwe. And for this country to stay in Zimbabwe until there is a new announcement on the ground. Now, SADC, you know, there is a SADC framework for elections. It says at least 2 weeks before you must deploy monitors. But we are thinking that given the challenge in Zimbabwe, maybe we need to deploy the first group 2 months before, the second group a month before. Now, we'll come back to the Portfolio Committee Chair and other members to discuss these issues. What is the time frame in Zimbabwe? It says that by June 26th in Zimbabwe, they have to agree. In fact, I think you dissolve the parliament June 26th in Zimbabwe. And 4 months after that, you must have a new administration, which means around October, September. October, so you must have. So we don't know when the election is going to be in Zimbabwe. We don't know where the election is going to be. But we know that by October, they must have a new administration. So we're trying to work backwards. So we think maybe September, maybe August, but you never know. I think it's of the parliament that was in place. Second thing is the assistance, financial assistance in Zimbabwe. I think the cabinet is going to be discussing this issue of assisting Zimbabweans with the election. The approach all SADC countries to make contribution. And I think SADC countries are discussing this question. SADC is going to send the largest ever observer mission of elections to Zimbabwe. So we'll contribute. I think they want to send about 400 people. We'll contribute about 80 people from South Africa. That's almost 22% of the entire SADC contingent. Civil society, parliament, and officials. We are going to have in our embassy in Zimbabwe, we are going to have a special office there to assist. Because ideally speaking, if you are there for 1 month, if Honorable Skosana is there for 2 months, then surely you need, Honorable Goyang, if you are there for 2 months, surely you need a lot of administration, the issue of transportation, we need a lot of transportation, security, communication, hotel, all those sort of logistics we are looking at. But I think there is a great agreement, at least from bureaucracy side, that you have to be there. But we leave the rest, Chair, to honorable members to make indications. But our reading as bureaucrats is that maybe the longer there, the better. And not to move after we say the elections were free and fair, to stay a week or two afterwards to accompany them to this. So it's a long haul. It might be about 2.5 months in Zimbabwe. Of course, your debate, there are protocols that you need to have with the administration. So I think there will be processes of going through those kind of protocols in Zimbabwe. Then, honourable members, please allow me. You gave me 40 minutes. I've taken 30 minutes. Can you allow me to ask Mr. Ramashao to take you through the budget? And then Mr. Mohai to take you through the administration. Thanks very much. Mr. Ramashao. Is it here? Peter? Can you come to
somewhere here?
While you're getting ready, TJ, that was a very astute presentation of both the APP and the strike plan at the same time, in terms of focusing on the updates of the strike plan, because primarily the strike plan hasn't changed, but only some of the issues. Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG. My presentation will be on the budget which is proposed for 2013-14. We're going directly to the budget. The first... the first slide, honorable members, talks about the environment that we find ourselves operating as DERCO. One of the issues that we want to highlight to honorable members is the economic challenges that are faced with in terms of the environment that we are working. One of the challenges that we need to deal with on a daily basis is the fluctuation of the exchange rate in terms of the 106 mission that we are located. The slowdown on the global economic activity has also exacerbated the challenges in terms of the capacity to deliver, in terms of the partnership that we normally do when we promote our economic diplomacy. And the issue of the expectation of the role that South Africa should play in the international environment in pursuing of the African agenda and South-South cooperation as well as the BRICS is one of the priorities area that we then look at when we allocate the resources. However, honorable members, the challenge that we have participated in all this fora with the limited resources, but we managed to deliver and we are committed that with the allocation that has been proposed, we'll be able to do more with less in this regard. Then just to highlight the approach that we followed in how we allocated the budget, we look at the strat plan for the department, which is guided by the departmental mandate, as well as the medium-term strategic framework, and focusing more on the outcome 11 in terms of the service delivery agreement, and also take into account the national developmental plan. And our area is basically chapter 7 in terms of how we look at the resources and see how we move forward to 2018. And the strategic goal for the department, as it's detailed, that we need to create a better South Africa and a better Africa, and the warrant in terms of how we prioritize the allocation, and also to then look at how these objectives are going to be achieved with the resources that we have. Just to go to the detailed presentation.
Members have the...
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
So this is what has been published in the ENE for 2013-14 financial year. As DJ has already indicated, that we've got 5 programs now in the as compared to 4 programs that we have in the past. The additional program is we have then now indicated that we split in terms of program 2, which is international relations, and we have international cooperation in terms of the resource allocation. Just to highlight, honorable members, in terms of the impact of the budget, is that in the 2013-14, the increase in the allocation, which is around about 5.3%, and the 2014-15 is 5.7%, and 2015-16 is 5.1%. This is in terms of the overall budget allocation. However, I want to bring to the excellencies the analysis of this increase. That, as I indicated earlier, that the challenge as a department, we need to deal with the Forex movement as well as the inflation adjustment in the country that you are represented in terms of hyperinflation that we need to take into account. So what we try to put a slide here in terms of the graph, which has got blue color, which is the nominal growth, which represents the 5% increase over the MTF period, and the red, which then indicate the allocation as we look at the forex exchange, forex rate of exchange, as well as the inflation adjustment. That the real growth, there is a real growth in terms of the inflation adjustment, but in terms of the magnitude, it's less in terms of the areas that we need to take into account. This is just to indicate the 5% increase based on the real and the nominal amount. An overview on this MTF allocation as is proposed, that in the over the MTF period, the spending will then increase to 6.2 billion in terms of the allocation. That's what the allocation indicates, which I have indicated that the increase is owing to the inflation rate adjustment across all programs, as well as the unitary fees that we pay for the head office building that we are now in terms we have entered in terms of the triple P for the 25-year period. And the more than 334 million of this increase is provided for the inflation adjustment, which is basically covering the compensation of employees in terms of the transferred officials that are posted in the mission, as well as LRP, and including the head office component. So there will be a detailed analysis that will go into the next page in terms of how the allocation is proposed. then the 151 million for the increase is provided for the release adjustment for accommodation leases commitments. So Excellency will recall that in the mission that we are representing, we need to have office space, and the majority of the mission, we don't have permanent accommodation. We always are renting, and that is the provision that we need to match the market in terms of the demand that we need to cater for that. And also the operational leases, which represent 13.8% in terms of other commitments that we do in terms of the ICT that we need to then get operational leases in terms of the communication that we run in terms of connectivity over the 126 machines, which is supported by 5 hubs that are basically deal with connectivity in terms of the network. Just to indicate in terms of the objectives that we have in this is program one, which highlight the strategic objectives to say this is the amount of money that has been put aside as a proposal for 2013, which is 1.3 billion, which in 2014-15 is 1.4 billion, and 2015-16 is 1.4 billion in terms of the proposed allocation in the achievement of the integrated information communication solution, because the program ICT is managed at head office in terms of how we deal with that in terms of the administrative part, which include finance and supply chain and HR in terms of how we then the department is fully capacitated in terms of the corporate function. Program two, which is basically the budget which is set aside for the MTF, is 1.2 billion, and for 14-15, 1.3 billion, and for 2015-16, 1.3 billion going to 1.4. So this is the allocation per program, which basically talks about the enhancement of the African agenda and sustainable development, which is covered within the APP as well as the strat plan. So these are the target that the department will pursue during the period of the MTEF. And we also, in terms of the strengthening and political and economic integration of SADC, which is the allocated amount, is basically the very legally is 93 million, and for 2014-15 is 99 million, and for the 2015-16 financial year, the proposed amount is 118 million. And the terms of the strengthening of South-South relations, these are the sub-programs within the program three, which now talks about the role that we play in terms of the agenda of the South. So the proposed amount in this is 752 million in this objective for 2013-14, 14-15, 797 million, and 2015-16, 834 million. And the strengthening of relations with the strategic formation of the North to advance national priorities and the African agenda and the development agenda of the South, which is basically the sub-program within that. The proposed amount is 935 million for the 2013-14, 14-15 is 987, and 2015-16 is just under a billion, which is 998 million in terms of the increase that will be affected. And the participation in the global governance or system of governance in terms of our multilateral engagement, the proposed amount in terms of the allocation for 2013-14 is 655 million, and 2014-15, 695, and 2015-16, 729 million. Then the strengthened political and economic relations, which is the representation that we do in terms of how we, the contribution that we also made in terms of the protocol services that we provide, which talks to program four. The proposed amount for 2013-14 is 538 million, 2014-15 568 million, and 2015-16, 624 million. Just to indicate excellences in terms of the APP for that, that the development of this, as I indicated, has been structured in terms of the objectives, but in terms of the budget, it talks to the five programs in terms of how we want to pursue this objective. And the proposed vote structure has been approved by National Treasury going forward to say this is how we're going to be able to then report. Just to go to the detail, honorable members, in terms of the baseline assessment to indicate what is it covered within the allocation, which now indicate in terms of the approved baseline for 2013-14 is 5.5 billion, which is the approved amount for in the ENA, which we are proposing, Excellency, to support that. The earmark funds, in terms of the allocation, we the first, in terms of allocation, there's a recapitalization of the African Renaissance Fund, which is which amount to 477 million. This is the money that we transfer the department to the ARF in terms of as a section 3A of the PFMA in terms of the public entity. The transfer payments to international organization, which we now we are a member as a country, that is the contribution to the AU membership, which is what we need to pay. We can report, Excellency, we've paid our membership all for the previous financial year. So this is for the membership for the 2013-14 financial year. But for the AU, it will be for 2014 in terms of the assessment budget. And these are payable during the first quarter of the financial year, which now the quarter for the AU is in starting from this January. So we can't pay in advance. We can only wait for the assessment to be provided to us. The South African Southern African Development Community, in terms of the contribution that we make, and also the infrastructure is around about 45 million. And the new partnership for African development in terms of the NEPAD, these are the membership that we paid. But over and above, in terms of the host country agreement, we're expected to contribute for the operationalization based on the courtesies that we provide as a host country. Because currently we are hosting the NEPAD Secretariat, the African Peer Review Mechanism, and the Pan-African Parliament. So over and above, we need to pay the membership as well as the contribution for the hosting. And the payment for the Commonwealth, we're also a member of that, we pay annually. And the UN membership contribution, we also pay, which is a huge amount. But all this amount we paid in US dollar. So in addition to that, honorable members, we have a property budget, which is basically earmarked for the project that has been outlined. But the property budget doesn't cover the whole strategic acquisition plan, because the plan that we have is more than the allocated amount in terms of how we progress this, because these are the long-term project. So the amount available after earmark funds is 4.4 billion in terms of the prioritization, how we allocate the budget. Then when you move to the core function, which is basically your compulsory expenditure, we talk about compensation of employees. As indicated, that we have around about 2,400 employees in terms of the budget, which we need to pay the salaries at head office, which amount to 575, and we also need to pay salaries for the transferred officials, which are part of the establishment, including the head of mission. And also in terms of the foreign dispensation, we need to pay foreign allowance for the transfer staff. But over and above, honorable members, we need to pay for the support staff that are in the mission, which you are regarded as locally recruited personnel in terms of salary, which you need to also cater for the inflation adjustment in terms of the cost of living adjustment that is provided annually in terms of the research that is done, which is per country, per mission. It's not necessarily once for each and every mission. There's a work that we do around that. So the amount for that is 679 million, which is part of the cost driver. As I indicated, inflation for goods and services, we have got information and communication technology in terms of how we do our work now. We're more in terms of alignment. One of the challenges that we find in the IT environment is that we need to then refresh that on a regular basis, because the environment in the technology industry is dynamic, and this technology become obsolete in terms of how we need to sustain that, because we depended on the companies that provide that, because they give you a lifespan for 5 years. After that, you don't have the support which you require, that you need to change your infrastructure in order to then remain competitive and communicating efficiently. Then we also have the foreign service benefits in terms of the services that are provided within the foreign service dispensation, which include accommodation as well as the schooling and the traveling privilege that are coded in terms of the foreign service dispensation. And also the accommodation leases, which is basically around about 615 million based on the provisions that we've made, and the public-private partnership in terms of the head office project. The amount that has been earmarked for that purposes is 196 million, and also for accommodation that we provide for the Pan-African Parliament, as well as for other services in terms of the UNDP offices, that in terms of the host country agreement that we have signed, we need to provide these services within the budget. And this has always been part of the baseline of the department. So what is remaining, honorable members, is 629 million. This is basically to cover operations for the department, which now provides for the traveling, which is one of the cost drivers that we need to have, because the work that we do, it involves a lot of traveling, which we need to cover from that, and also the trade work in terms of economic diplomacy, we need to cover from that, and also the additional mandate that we need to do as a department in terms of our involvement in BRICS, which we need to implement the Durban Declaration in terms of that. So these are the part of the programs that are additional, but they are not necessarily provided for in the baseline, but we work within the indicative baseline to reprioritize to see that we still remain focused in the achievement of the program of action that we have set for ourselves. Just to indicate, Excellency, honorable members, in terms of the pie, we just want to demonstrate to say, in terms of the compensation of employees, which represent 41% of the budget, and we also have goods and services, which represent 29%. These goods and services are obligatory expenses that I indicated earlier, and the earmark funds represent 19%. So the 629 million represent only 11% of the budget, which is the how the budget has been allocated on this. Just to indicate that some of the few challenges that we want just to highlight is that in terms of these are based on the cost-saving measures that we try to see, how can we do more with less resources, which means that we need to review on how we structured. One of the challenges is that in the environment, especially with the local recruitment personnel as a support staff, we rely or we honor the country, the host country, laws and regulations. One of the challenges that in other countries, more developed countries, we don't have retirement age. So in our case, we have a retirement age of 65. In other countries, like USA, you don't have that retirement age. And now, in terms of the downtime, in terms of the economic outlook, other countries, they're increasing the retirement age, which now it was 65 because of the fiscus that they weren't able to then pay the staff that are retiring. Then they've increased that retirement age, which affected also. We need to abide by that, and that will affect our way of managing this in terms of acquiring new set of skills. So it is a challenge in terms of managing that environment. The other challenge that we want to bring to the honorable members is the rental of accommodation abroad. as we are represented in 126 missions. So the challenge is we don't have sustainability in terms of how we maintain these properties, because we can sign a lease agreement for 5 years, but we are guaranteed that after 5 years, then the landlords will come with a lot of requests to increase the rentals, because they will be able to go out, and then we need to then find a way how do we then satisfy the landlord in terms of the monetary terms. Because in other places, they will require that we pay leases in advance for 5 years. So that is the challenge that we have, that we don't have a situation where we manage. So that is the part that we want to indicate, as well as the maintenance budget for our state-owned properties. We've got few state-owned properties, and these state properties, they are very old in terms of the current environmental requirements, that in other parts you find that the material used is also asbestos that was used, because they are more than 50 years, most of the buildings that we own, and they require a lot of renovation. We have a current project that is taking place in Washington as well as Tokyo, and that is one of the examples that we need to put a lot of money, because the money that is available for $200 million is basically to do renovation. We can't necessarily acquire properties from that. And also, this, I indicated earlier, is that the increased role in terms of South Africa's participation in the international fora, that we're expected to play a bigger role, and all that requires that we need to have additional money in order to deliver on that, if we still need to do what we've been doing in terms of representation. So what we indicate that as we move forward, DGS indicate that the department has been in the process of drafting a foreign service bill to see how then do we then rationalize this and see how best we can move forward. And also one of the issues to say the property acquisition strategy, to say how then we do increase our portfolio, because we need to then scan the environment in terms of whether we can sustain the acquisition of property in the way we are using the fiscal, or should we explore in a funding model where we can able to go into partnership like we did with the head office a building in terms of the public-private partnership. Can we then look at options of going to a long lease in terms of how we need to sustain? Because more importantly is the maintenance thereof, to say how do we then maintain the property that we acquire, to, so that we don't have to then incur a lot of expenditure in the long run. And one of the issues is the establishment of the South African Development Partnership, which is underway, which I think will be able to then assist the department in the discharge of its mandate more effectively in the continent in terms of the infrastructure capabilities. Thank you, Excellencies.
Honourable Chair, thanks very much. So we'll take questions and in the process also cover human resources. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much, DG, for the quite comprehensive briefings. Honourable members, open for questions and so on. What we'll do, let's just change the format a bit to allow for members to engage and give over to other members so that other members engage. So, Honourable Jacobus, you will have the opportunity to raise all your questions that you have, and don't hope for a second bite. We simply don't have the time. No? Then we'll give each member then that opportunity to raise all your issues, but please be as concise as possible, because we might run into... So let's do it like that. Okay, it's going to be Honourable Jacobus, Honourable Davidson, Honourable Ilov, Honourable September, followed by Honourable Dudley, Bawungonyama, and then Bawuskosana. Okay, it's going to be in that order. Please fire away. You don't have to wait for my indication.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to start with the presentation that was done by DG, and let's fire all my questions and then come to the second presentation by DG. My first question to DG is on page 3 of his presentation, where we're looking at the situational analysis. I think it's slide 2, the middle one. I just wanted to check, what is the role of, because DG mentioned the where's DG? Oh, sorry. DG mentioned all the conflicts in the continent, conflicts and unconstitutional overthrowing of governments and so on. Now, the role of the AU in curtailing these armed conflicts and unconstitutional change of government, because there is an organ called decent security of the AU. What role do they have to play, or what role are they playing? Because we seem to be seeing more and more of these conflicts and so on. And I think the AU has a particular role to play there. The other one is about, I'm just trying to mark my pages, the issue of exports in finished products instead of raw products. Do we not have the capacity here to finish a product and then export that product instead of exporting a raw product and then importing a finished product? Or do we not have the capacity to build that so that we can do that? In terms of the gold, platinum, and all of that, we get our jewelry back in terms of the exports that we've done. And what are we doing in terms of developing that capacity? Then the other one is around tourism. Do we collaborate with our national carrier, for instance? There are so many people that wants to go to Cuba, for instance, if I can mention just one example. And SAA doesn't fly to Cuba. You have to fly via Lufthansa or other airlines and so on to get there. And there's people expressing a real interest of going to countries like Cuba and so on. Are we collaborating with our national carrier in particular to facilitate that? The other one is on DTRD in terms of language proficiency. I don't think we must just insist that our staff learns the local language of the host country. I think also our heads of mission that are there must learn the local language. Because many a times people can run circles around you if you have to get an interpreter to interpret what the other person has been saying. So I think that must be one insistence that we actually have to say. Also, the diplomats must learn the local language. I think that's for the DG. And then can I go on, Chairperson, to the actual budget, if I may? The first one is on page 13. I see there that we've done fairly well in terms of spending for the past financial year, 92%, 100, 100, 100, in terms of our priorities. But I still think that this is a point that I want to make for us as a portfolio committee, that we must... thank you. That we must actually do some kind of introspection in terms of whether money does follow our priorities. Because sometimes, as I said also, I say it in all committees that I serve on, that, you know, we can say we've spent 94%, 95%, you know, and it's not necessarily the case. So I think we must really have a workshop on how to analyze whether our money follows the priorities, because that's the bottom line, basically. And we've got our priorities set out there, and as I said, I can see there we've done fairly well for the past financial year. So we just need to actually follow that through. And on the issue of the analysis done in terms of building or leasing, building, leasing, buying, and so on, I also think we must look at that issue, because there might be some missions that we'd really like to keep. I know we've got the house in the, is it the DRC or the Burundi, that we've built there. We've built the house from scratch. I know that I was there. So I think we must really look at the cost effectiveness of what it is that we need to do. Because if we need to lease or rent for, you know, forever and forever, then, you know, it doesn't make sense. We might as well build or buy. But we need to look at the cost effectiveness study, if there's a word like that. The other question is on the baseline assessment in terms of our membership of all these organizations. Just to ask, are we up to date with all our payments? because I know in some of these countries, and I've heard that even the U.S. is a culprit. They don't pay their subscriptions to the U.N. So I just want to know if we are up to date with all of that, and are other countries coming to the party in terms of paying their subscriptions also. Page 26, the building of the PAP. You know, how far are we with that? Because I know there were talks at one point. I'm not sure if the talks are still on the table. Are we on track? Are we going to build the Pan-African Parliament? I know there, you know, site identified, but I'm not sure whether that is still on track. The last question, Chairperson, is on page 28, on the retirement age of locally recruited personnel in mission. Now, I don't know what the because we have our guidelines in terms of retirement age. Does that not kind of transfer to the host country? To say, look, our people must retire at 60 or 65, whichever the age is. So your people must also retire at the age of 60, 65, because we can't carry them, because it means it's a financial issue for us. Because if people say, no, 80, then we must pay them until the age of 80. It's not fair. So I think what we must do is to just also put the guideline to say, in our country, this is the age at which staff retire. I'm not sure if we can impose that, but it's something that we can look at and maybe negotiate with them. To say, look, because we can't pay people until the age of 80 or 90. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I am going to work primarily off this document, which is the green document that you turned on. And I want to focus on one point that was made, and it's a point that's not hugely relevant to look up the page, but it's on page 17, which focuses on the budget allocation, insufficient budget allocation to achieve departmental priorities. And the first question I asked myself was, well, what are these priorities? And how are these priorities reflected in this document? And I don't see a sense of those priorities coming through in this document. I see a number of programs, but in no way do I get a real sense of what program is more important than the other. It also is a feeling that I have when we reflect on our international relations. Now, the DG has just spoken about CIVETS as a new organization. Incidentally, I don't even see CIVETS in this document. And yet, clearly, it is of strategic importance. I don't see economic diplomacy in this document. And yet, the DG does, and quite rightly so, comment on the fact that it is of huge importance. So I think this document as a comprehensive document is lacking. And I think we need to update it. But I also need to get a sense of what our priorities are, even within our international relations. We've got SADC, we've got BRICS, we've got CIVETS, we've got a whole list of organizations of which we are members. And then I reflect on what our budget restraints are, and our need to open up relationships with these countries, particularly in terms of an economic diplomacy context, and from that a commercial diplomacy context. And I don't see that sense coming through. I hear there is a cabinet resolution to open up offices or embassies in every single African country. I think to myself, why? What are our interests there? The DG quite rightly points out there's a new organization called CIVETS on the block. Where's our focus in terms of that? You know, I was very struck when David Cameron, because I think the whole world, as the DG says, is recognizing the new power houses are in the East, and there's a whole realignment going on. And Britain and European countries are not they recognize it as well. So David Cameron leads a delegation to India. And he opens up the second trade office and he indicates that three more trade offices are going to be opened up in India within the next 2 years. So that's one embassy and five or six trade offices. That's incredible focus, because they recognize that is a huge priority to expand trade with India, and huge opportunities there. But I get the sense that we, by comparison, are just kind of opening up offices everywhere without a real sense of saying to ourselves, in terms of economic diplomacy, which is has to be of key importance, bearing in mind our own economic situation and the world's economic situation, I don't get a sense of that coming out of our strategic planning, of where our strategic interests are, strategic economic interests are, and how we are following through on an intensive basis the exploitation of the potential coming out of it. Now, it may well be in the DG's mind and in the minds of, and I'm sure it is, but as a parliamentarian, I don't get that sense coming through. And I would like to know that if we are doing this, we'd like to hear. Now, I hear there's BRICS, but in a sense, I mean, BRICS is an amalgam of five countries. But in a sense, our real interest is China and India. And that's done almost on a bilateral basis, not through BRICS as an organization. So I'd like to get a real sense of a focus, and more particularly in terms of economic diplomacy and arising out of that commercial diplomacy, that we are really going hell for leather, because we need it. We need to grow our economy, and that's the way we're going to do it. Second of all, just in terms of tourists, tourists are a huge source of growing our economy. I think the figure is for every one tourist, there are 8 jobs created. But I don't get a sense of where we are focusing on getting those tourists. It may well be that Asia is correct in terms of looking at the Asian basin. But are we looking at places where there are high net worth individuals? You see, what I would like to know is, to what extent have we looked at the spend per tourist coming into this country, and where that spend is coming from? You see, I hear the DG saying we've got to look in our neighborhood. But if somebody from Zimbabwe is going to come across the border and spend 500 Rand, and somebody from America is going to spend 5,000 Rand, where should we be putting our efforts in terms of attracting a tourist and catering for that tourist? And I want to know where that type of analysis is being done. Because if we're going to promote, and quite rightly, I mean, if we're going to promote tourism, then where are the high net worth individuals that are going to come and spend these bucks? Because that's what you need. And that's what I want to know, if money is going into that. The other last point that I want to make is this, that in terms of this document and going through the various projects, programs, I see a lot of statements which are nice. I turn to, for instance, page 22 of this document, with the sub-programs and continental cooperation. And I see a lot of inputs, but not a lot of outputs. So let me just go through some of them. I mean, we talk about NEPAD, lobbied for support for NEPAD programs with 11 African countries. So what was the result of that? Was there a result? Recommended 14 projects in terms of ARF. Well, what was the result of that? And so we can go on. I mean, someone gets a sense of a huge inputs in the process, but not a sense of output in terms of what has been achieved. Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm partially covered, but there's a few questions I would like to ask. The one is about the program. The programs involving companies to export from South Africa. Is there any, I'm worried about the link between the department and these companies. What programs have they got to help these people, and even with, you know, with whatever they do, what is there anything they do to help these people to link up, not only with the department, but also with the overseas companies and the exports, that they, that the missionaries can see way in what is need. The next thing is the annual budget. What was very interesting, when we got the financial thing, we got the nominal and the real amounts. But on the graphs that the DG gave us, was that incorporated? Because it's nice, you know, if it's just coming up, going up every year, but the inflation and the weakness of the rand is not included in there. I would just like to know if there's, how did they do that? If there's anything in that? And then tourism. It's surprising to see that we get such a lot of visitors from the SADC countries. Are they visitors or are they immigrants? How can we see if that people is coming to stay here, visit, or immigrants? Because there is so many people coming into the country from the SADC countries, and that's not going to spend a cent in this country. That's just going to get a lot of money from this country before they leave. And like, I think our weakest market is the American market. The American market is one of the lucrative markets in the world, but there's not a lot of American immigrants coming to the country when I check the last stats, especially coming to the Western province. And then on the Zimbabwean framework issue on the elections that's going to be held, I would like to know, where are you going to get the people from, that 80 people? Are you going to train them? Are they going to get proper training before they go there? Do they know what they're going to do there? And is it budgeted for that? Or where is it going to come from, the budget? And then property. The property, I can remember last time you were here, there was a lot of property that you're busy selling in Namibia. I would like to know if there's any property hanging loose, because I know if there's property that's not being used and it's standing empty, it, within a couple of years or a couple of months, it become worth nothing because the people just take over there. Then what my colleague said is about the missions worry me. The performance of every mission, we've got so many missions. Is there a performance guide? Is there a performance audit on the missions to see if it's really worth having this mission in this country? Because financially, it's just a burden on us. We don't get anything from it. So there must be some indicators that we can see what we get from where. And then the reconstruction. Isn't there a lot of small countries where we can rather have one embassy than three or four? And then I must congratulate you. You've got more embassies and trade missions in India than the UK. So at least that's one something positive I can say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you to the DG and his team for the presentation. May I ask the following? I don't see in the program the training that the department is going to give the members of parliament on language, in particularly this committee. Maybe it's hidden under one of the programs, but I don't see it specifically. Then, secondly, I am trying, as I was reading through this, I'm trying to look at the motivation for the split that you have in this document, international relations one side and cooperation on the other side. In a quick glance on it, I see the motivation says the one is relations and the other one is participation. How can you separate having a relation and not cooperating in that relation? How can you separate having cooperation through or with or without a relation? So maybe help to unpack for us whether it is an accounting matter or in practice also. how exactly that will pan out, and maybe some experience to date of how it's going. I see that you are advocating a huge expenditure for consultants. May we understand? Well, you saying in your document it's going to increase 2015-16. May I understand the motivation for that as opposed to the department making its own investment into huge units in the department that could strengthen the department, like your research capacity? I saw somewhere you had something about research, and it says two. If that is the case, I mean, surely the department does require specialized units, because things have changed. South Africa certainly are having leadership roles in very many different, and where South Africa is not sort of in there, they, you know, they drag us through the window into some of the things. And so that capacity probably needs to be shown in the department as opposed to an ad hoc arrangement, which in most instances consultants are. I want to understand, Chairperson, from the documentation here, it comes across as most of the groups that we are involved in, they show a big economic outlook, you know, big economic motivation. I do not see in there, or do you have an analysis that speak to, surely there are politics that comes out of these groups and formation, and the reality of the politics out of that. You know, when people come together, they don't talk about trade and so on. They talk about strength of themselves, and they talk about, you know, which way things must go for whatever. Is my analysis wrong, or has the department been able to live to that, up to that reality? Having said that, has the department received, if you just take BRICS for example, has the department received any calls that BRICS, for example, must play, superpower is the wrong word, a huge political role in certain places, certain I don't want to make examples, certain particular events, activities, or countries, for that matter? Has it been seen like that? I'm asking this because when we met as members of parliament with the EU grouping, they were quite bothered with that situation. Let me end of chair by asking, because you've analyzed, or you know, where we are involved in quite a bit, I think it is probably high time that we do the economics of our participation. What does it mean? Because for us, our key programs are, whatever we do, wherever we are, they must amount to changing the lives of our people in the country, making sure that we can end poverty, all the other priorities that we have set as a country, which is our key priority areas. Do we have economic analysis that says that, you know, our participation in all these different things amount to that? If so, please motivate to me the justification of. I'm not saying we should get out, but motivate justification in bodies like the Commonwealth. Thank you.
It was page 15 that was standing out for me. I know initially there was like a brave reference to the 1% increase and how good things are looking right now, but then looking at this real growth pattern that's going down steadily 2015, 16, is that something that's accepted? Is that kind of fitting in with the plan? Was that some big tragedy? Is that something that we should have our eyes on? Is that something we as a committee should be actually looking at and doing something about? So I'm just seeing it there as a sort of a fact that it's going down, and it doesn't make total sense to me. Our build in Washington, that was supposed to open, I think, any time June or July. Is it still on track? Is that still happening? And have the costs stayed in line? What is the story around that? And then also, with that build in Washington, does it indicate a greater focus there? Are we taking advantage of trade opportunities there as much as we should? Is it more than we've done in the past? Is it less? What is our situation there? Have we got a real serious focus there? I'm just wondering, we're putting a lot of money, obviously, into a building there, but I'm just wondering if we're putting a lot of everything else into getting out of that relationship, what we need to get out of it in terms of our poverty and unemployment situations here. Then just a thought on... I'd like to touch on trade in Israel, but I think I'm going to leave that because I know we're going to be discussing a lot on Israel, and perhaps that's something we can look at another time. That little note there about, because we spoke about a build in Tokyo as well, and there was a little note there about Japan quantitative easing to stop deflation, to make their products more competitive, but what is that actually doing to us? How serious is that for us in that situation? And is there something we can or should be doing about it? Zimbabwe, the plan sounds great in terms of SADC and Zimbabwe, South Africa deploying people in Zimbabwe. Peacekeeping presence, I have no idea. the thought is in my head that there's usually a huge build-up of violence beforehand. So having observers there floating around is one thing, and keeping those observers safe is fine. But I'm not sure how much impact it has and whether there should be some kind of discussions around a peacekeeping presence in that time. And I know anything about Zimbabwe is touchy and sensitive, but it's... And then is Durka involved in any way with the Treasury grant to Zimbabwe for the elections? That money that's been earmarked for Zimbabwe there, do you have any involvement in terms of the accountability there? That'll be fine for us.
Well, I thought you said no.
Well, sure,
okay, Baba. I'm coming to you soon. Just hold a sec. You'll follow Baba, no? And then Sulu will be the last one. Okay.
No, Chairperson, I wanted to really, I didn't have questions, but since you asked me to. Well, DG, my view, Chairperson, is the amount of information that has been given to us is so much mammoth. It's quite detailed, and one can only go to the situational analysis that you started with. The changing political and economic environment, and perhaps the positioning of South Africa, and within that situation. That would be my area of interest, and DG. With regard to the changing of power relations that you referred to, and the changing of that the minister in his statement also refers to, the very first part of the statement refers to that bullet point, global environment is carried by major shifts in global political and economic, social and cultural dynamics. To me, that's a very fundamental statement which beckons the necessity to understand where are we as South Africans. Are we hitting all over? Is there a strategy of focusing? I think a number of questions came from other members, which actually back on the same answer, but I want to base it from that bullet point. Are we having a targeted strategic focus? For instance, Africa. We say that our policy is focusing on Africa as it is written here. Is there an economic strategy around Africa? And with a sort of a well spelled out evaluation and monitoring mechanisms as to how much are we getting out of whatever that we're putting in Africa. That is one issue with me. With regard to yesterday, there was a very big debate on CAR and the amounts of money that we're putting. There's a call by different countries for us to be involved in various parts. Is there something that comes to us economically? Because we have to do balancing act. And the other one, Europe is still a very strategic player economically. If I look at what you have in terms of your pie and the chart, how are we positioned with Europe? The China, is it a one-way traffic? Do we have a strategy with China? Or is it just a one-way traffic of China and which may hit the balance of payment of South Africa with regard to China? And are we having a real strong strategy with regard to China? I know that some of these questions that I'm asking may be questions that are more political than, and but you'll guide me, Chairperson and the DG, but I thought I must ask. The last one, the other one is the point that my colleague and Madam Dudley, the question of Middle East. Chairperson, I'm tempted to dabble on your interesting subject of the Middle East, the Palestine, Israel. Is there a kind of a concrete plan of action of our involvement there? Because it seems to me that we are well positioned and well poised as South Africa to play a role, because it seems that both players there, they respect South Africa so much. And it's an opportunity, because if we're to crack that area, it's a soft target for us presently. Albeit it be a very difficult one, but it's a soft target to South Africa, because South Africa is trusted by both players. If we're to come up with a strategy now, it would definitely lift up our bar and internationally. Chairperson, those are the issues really from me. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Now, let me ask the two remaining members. We are running into time constraints. The DG still has to respond to all the issues. So please be as concise as possible. Thanks. Marcus Kosana first, and then you'll be the last.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to do that. In fact, in the middle of so many questions, I simply prefer to make comments. DG, when you opened, you stated that the strategic plan is informed by the pronouncements of the president and also some cabinet decisions. I think must be from Lekgotla and so on. And I think just to add what Honorable Ngonyama said about the shifting international systems, which the minister is also mentioning in that statement, my issue here is I would like to see those pronouncements and decisions from cabinet and also these shifting global economic systems having an interlock, practical interlock with the national development plan. Just, not just to mention it, there must be a practical interlock with the national development plan. The other point I want to mention is there's some point when you mentioned reorganization of some of the structures internally. I think you didn't say it, but it's written somewhere there about the monitoring and evaluation structure within the department. I would also like to see a synergy between that one and the one that exists in the presidency, so that we shouldn't have this disjointed type of approach. With the international perspectives on power and security, you added something which I think is very, very crucial, which is food security, which is looming very, very strongly in the continent. But there again, we have this vexed question of the convergence of the U.S. and the Euro-Atlantic forces, and China with the Asian forces into the continent. But they bring in soft power, which is trade and commerce. Now South Africa would have to now to play a role where it becomes the protector of the political and economic sovereignty of the continent. It'll have to take that role, whether we like it or not. The other point I want to raise is simply, I'm making comments there. I'm not even questioning. It's China. If you look at the other powers, national powers, even the superpower, when they relate with China, at some point they question the human rights record of China. In those meetings, they raise those issues very sharply with China. I think we need to do that, particularly because the minister yesterday was very forceful about the projection of the foreign policy based on Ubuntu. Now, this is the new vehicle now we're using, Ubuntu, on our foreign policy. It's African Renaissance in context. So I would like us also to raise those issues with China. They need to be raised really on behalf of those people who are suffering in those areas, just as we do with Zimbabwe. Mr. Chairman, let me leave it at that point. I have so many comments here. I need to respect you.
Thank you, Chair. I won't make political comments. Would I? But my questions will be very concise, Chair, as normally. I'm going to the budget financial report, page 13. I would like to congratulate the department on the 100% spending on the 4 of the 5 programs. Well done. My only concern is administration. I've noticed this. You spend 92.4%. And I didn't hear you mentioning the reasons why and what are you going to do to solve that problem. And then, if you look at public diplomacy and protocol services, you are going to spend 55, you will get 55 million rand less on that specific program. That is a drop of, it's a minus 18.2%. Won't you encounter problems with that? I think that's only two questions, sir. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Members, let me just for a moment acknowledge guests that we have in our midst. Behind you. Here we have three visiting officials from the Parliament of Zimbabwe. Angeline Kutu, who is a research officer. We have Zenda Precious, a committee clerk. And then we have Ellen Mujambizi, who is also a committee clerk. They are guests of our parliament on a learning program. Welcome. They are observing the proceedings. Welcome. And you know you are at home, don't you? Okay. No, thank you so much. Then, honourable members, let's proceed, and let me raise a couple of questions and put the DG in a very tight spot to respond to all these issues in roughly DG in about 25 minutes so that we can adjourn the meeting. Now, DG, one of the issues again is the ARF, the African Renaissance Fund. I guess my question shortly is perhaps for us to get an indication, even if it could be done later, to be given a list of the current projects underway. What projects are undertaken, where, and how much they cost. So that's the one. The second one relates to the hosting of these various offices, which costs us a lot of money. And my concern, of course, while there is self-evident value in some of, you know, in hosting some of these bodies and so on, but is there, there's amongst others talk of, or at least lobbying for hosting the BRICS Bank as an example. Well, we have difficulties with the Pan-African Parliament as we speak. Isn't it perhaps wise, especially because they cost us so much money, that we undertake a possible review of you know these bodies that we want to host here on the basis of what value you know they bring with hosting, especially because the department operates on such a tight on a shoestring budget, and this happens year after year after year. I mean, payment of the department's officials is 41% of the total budget. Now, generally the norm is around 35% or so expenditure of your total budget. Already you are at 41, understandably. But it's also indicative, honorable members, of the other problem that there's always the issue of the department not being able to fill vacant posts, at least in part. Of course, there are other reasons as well, but that also accounts for a part of that problem. And perhaps isn't it time to look at that? And you know, prioritize spending in that regard if you want to use that terminology. Then the department has moved in terms of implementing the MPET, and the DG now has what some call a back office in the corporate world, dealing with issues of monitoring and evaluation, the strat plan and so on, which is an encouraging, you know, development, because these are critical instruments in ensuring that not only do we comply, but we have an effective monitoring tool in terms of our strat plan and so on and so on. However, DG, and perhaps this really is not a question, but just a concern that we have seen in other departments. Now, for instance, I was in public works as well before I became chair, while I was also a member here. And part of the problem normally with such back offices, so to speak, are that they become superstructures within the department. I'm saying there's always that danger, especially because they are located in the office of the Director General. So whoever speaks from that structure speaks with the authority of the Director General. It's something perhaps, DG, that I just want to raise with you, not necessarily for a response, but perhaps just to sensitize you around that particular tendency. The Honorable raised the issue of the two programs. And then the last, I think, issue is the issue of, Gigi, the para-diplomacy issue. In spite of Cabinet having, laid out the measures and guidelines for international, for coordination of these international activities, the structure has been set up, but we get the sense that still, there's still this Tier Makar, happening where provinces and local governments, go out, do their own thing. What are the prospects of us finding, either strengthening what we have, or finding more effective ways, of pulling this thing together? Because still, the problem is still there in spite of, the issues. In spite of the attempts that have been made. No, that's fine. Okay, no. Thanks, Didi. Those would be my contributions. And you have your 25, Didi. Please don't exceed. Thanks.
Honorable Chair, first let me thank you and all members for comments and for the questions. I just put something on there just to give you a feedback from the National Treasury and from the Office of Performance and Monitoring Evaluation in the Presidency, that indeed our stress plan APP are fully aligned. Fully aligned. I think we're the first department to get this appreciation, fully aligned. Between the five programs, I just thought I should put this on record from Dr. Sin Philip, because they have to monitor alignment so we can say from here we are fully, fully aligned. The first department to do so. Now, all right, members, thanks for the comments, Honorable Skosan. And I also noted from the chair yourself certain things that we need to take on board. I have colleagues here. I'm going to take 10 minutes and other colleagues take 5 minutes each to respond. Surely we cannot respond to 38 questions in this, but what we'll try to do, Honorable Chair, we'll try to do our best to answer these questions. I found them very, very enriching, to be honest. But also it shows that all our members really have gone through this document, which is very heartening for a bureaucrat who spent time to prepare. At least now we know that you read them. So, Chair, I want to put that on record. Real appreciation that honorable members respect the labor and efforts we put in this by reading this document. I was surprised because I have to recall certain things myself on what is written in the document. Now, on a broader question, honorable members, broader issues. Opening of a mission it cannot be a DIRCO-only decision. It's a decision that is taken not very, very lightly. It's a decision that goes through quite a number of processes in government. Honourable members, recall where we come from. Recall where we were prior to 94. And recall where we want to do. We said we want to be part, we are part of Africa, and we belong there. We have no other home but the continent. This is the reality. This is where we are. This is who we are. We are Africans. We can do whatever we do elsewhere. If you're not respected by your neighbor in your backyard, we have no standing. you have no standing. If your neighbor, your neighborhood, your cousins don't respect you, even if you can throw a lavish party elsewhere, you have no standing. So what we did from 94, that's why I want to put back this slide, 94. We say where we were. At that time, most of our missions were in Europe. And you can understand the history of this country, why they were in Europe. Either for economic reasons, but they were mostly for political reasons. Europe, Taiwan, Lilongwe, here and there, for political reasons. So we say, when you open up missions, you take both political reasons and economic reasons. So going forward to the future, let's combine both political reasons. Hence the decision to say, where will we be in 2002, 2010, 2030, 2040, where will we be? So we said to the cabinet as bureaucrat, trained for this job, you need to balance both. In some countries, you go first political because you want to have to share and stabilize, especially the continent. We're not in Asia, except in Taiwan and, Japan. But we say there are prospects. If you look into the economy of that region, major economies there, we're not in China. We're not in India. We're not there. He says, we cannot miss that region of the world. So let's begin to develop the political relationship, economic relationship. Latin America, we're in, where was Truth now? Uruguay, Paraguay, there were all those military guys there. He says, no, you must be in Brazil. You must be in Mexico. You must be in this area for political and economic reasons. So they always interact. There is always the interaction between political and economic reasons. So, and then I said, but you have Eastern Europe coming. EU is expanding from 10 to 25 to 30. You cannot leave out Poland, Bulgaria, Hungary. You cannot leave those countries because these are major important political and economic. So what we then do, I remember, we say this is what we have at the disposal. So let's move in this area and this area and trying to balance. That's why it was a gradual build up from 94 to 2002. 2002 to 2013, we're building up all these things. We are saying, honorable members, they ask the question, do we have a strategy to analyze what comes out of these missions as we establish them? Are there economic benefits? History has taught us, you can look throughout the last two centuries of diplomacy, that in some cases you have certain benefits now, and other benefits accrue later. Sometimes now, and they fade with time. So what we normally do in our work, we say, yes, let's open up in Malawi, if for political reasons. But we look at Malawi, and the region, and the role we can play in stabilizing Malawi, in stabilizing the region. Because Africa, honorable members of parliament, that is where we sell finished goods. The question that was raised by honorable member. In Africa, we sell value-added products, 100% in Africa. They make us to wrap our companies. Last year we sold 60,000 cars in Africa, from almost zero. Cars here were built now, we have gone to a threshold of about 68%. So it's around, in terms of roots of origin, these are South African cars. Those are free. They sell at 66%, we are now at 68%. So in terms of roots of origin. And you can see the impact in the Eastern Cape, Uitenhage area, around Pretoria. You can see the increasing of automotive product components, factories, and more jobs. So you can see the relationship between these two. Now, if we move towards the railway industry, if this program of getting the 10,065 locomotives succeed, And then if you have the strategy, when it says, let's revive every industry that we had in the 50s and 60s, you then open up market. You must see the request from Africa to buy locomotives, even used wagons, locomotives, because Africa is building infrastructure, rail. Where would they get that from South Africa? I'm sure we can give more information of how many wagons, rail we sell in Africa. But if we can then develop that railway industry, we'll see more jobs here. That's why we're very, very close with public enterprises on their project. Because as they build capacity, we have to look for a market out there. So maybe Ghana was not a market 20 years ago when we opened an embassy. But Ghana now has oil. Ghana has recovered things. So you see the middle class in Ghana. Who's going to supply middle class in Ghana with goods and services? It should be South Africa. So for some time, maybe it's not obvious. Zimbabwe is going to stabilize Zimbabwe. It was a huge market for us. So we already work in. That's why we work together with the BSA to build that huge road you see in Zimbabwe now and the toll gates. We do that jointly. When you say the crisis is going to be forever crisis in Zimbabwe, but we must build fast roads. If I have to take a truck here to Lubumbashi to deliver goods in the mines there, there must be a road. Because I want to make sure that as our companies produce more mining equipment, we can reach Lubumbashi, we can reach Kitwe in Zambia quicker, faster. And then we're working them with on railway in SADC to make sure that we have functional railway in the region. But obviously, honorable members, I think you are right. Maybe we have to produce more, like ask the strategy by the three honorable members. We have to share with the study why we open up in Juba, South Sudan. What is the reason in South Sudan? Because now we've opened in South Sudan. Why don't we just wait until they sort out their problem in South Sudan? Maybe, honorable chair, I think we have to do that more and more and not wait maybe for this kind of meeting. So the honorable members are coming along with us. Like I was saying, why some of us feel must open up in Colombia. Why in Colombia? Because of the economy there. Now, the cities that are both in the APP, you can see them there. Now, if I have to come to certain questions very quick, the role of the AU. When we transformed from OAU to AU, when the leaders met in Durban, they say, but we must strengthen this organ of helping us to deal with the peace and security. Hence, the AU Peace and Security Council was established. So that there is an institution, mechanism, there is a strategy to deal with the conflict. Somebody must take responsibility. And today is a primary one. But when we had the Security Council, 2010, 11, 12, we said AU itself, Peace and Security Council, does not have the capability. Its main role is to ensure peace and security in the continent. And that's why every region has representation there. Take CAR. We have to take cue from AAU pronouncement on CAR in terms of the new changes that have taken place. Based on that, we can then reformulate our foreign policy and how we relate with that institution. But we realize that it is good to have a mechanism called AAU Peace and Security Council. But you don't have capabilities there. Hence, I guess spearheaded the resolution of the Security Council when we were there, of closer coordination between AU Peace and Security Council and UN Peace and Security Council on conflict prevention, on conflict resolution, and stabilization of the continent. So we use that resolution now. We can move into Mali through that resolution. We can move into CAR through that resolution. We can move into strengthen Somalia with that resolution. Because there is an agreement that there will be an interaction between the two institutions. So we still pray. It's a nascent thing, but we hope that we have to capacitate it. And part of that, honorable members, that's why we agreed on the regional brigades. Regional brigades. SADC, we are very, very advanced in SADC in terms of regional brigades. Capacitating, educating capabilities, training programs, hospital, etc., etc. ECOWAS is advanced in that. So we say part of giving a tooth truth, because you have to buy it, you have to move, is to have regional brigades so that we can respond quickly into this problem. That's why it was very easy for SADC to say we want to move to Eastern Congo and stabilize and deal with the negative forces there so we can stabilize the Congo. We agree, ideally speaking, as the most diverse economy in the continent, with a lot of history of industrialization, we're supposed to have at least now exporting 60-70% of finished product. We are not yet there. But if you look into EPAP 3, iteration, and the strategy developed by DTI to go into value add, we hope that in the next administration, 2014-2019, if we go on the way we are going in terms of investment, technology transfer, we should be able to change the basket of products that we sell abroad. I will bring China in this area, one-way traffic or two-way roadway. In my previous life, I lived in Japan. Now, I'm sure the honorable members, some of them will recall the structure of the economy in the 80s and 90s. It was a deliberate strategy or intention, I don't know how it happened, that almost 90% of African raw material were exported, as they are. This is in the whole of the continent. You can see, I come from a mining area, you can see from a mining area, you can see the railway line have to find the route to go towards Durban. So we said, let's change this pattern of economic planning to gradually value add. Part of the takeoff was the question of automotive industry. Now we talk about the railway industry. Now we're talking about more value add in agriculture, et cetera, et cetera. So we're trying to change that. Even our own economic structure has to change because it's not sustainable as it is. So look at the mining towns, the poverty around the mining towns. It will tell you that there was no strategy to deal with the mining industry except mining. Marikana should tell you two lessons, I think, if you go to Marikana. So we're trying to reverse that 100 years of planning to say we need to, yes, export, but we need to do more value add. Hence, it says to DHET, higher education, you must have more AMBAC schools. You must have more to train artisans to produce goods and services that we can sell. And if we do that, we won't have the problem. We have an agreement with China, re-agreed between President Xi Jinping and President Zuma during the BRICS, that we increasingly sell value add. And then they say, what we also will do, we'll try to invest more in South Africa, not only mining, but mining beneficiation. Luckily, we still have a cheaper energy, comparatively speaking, that we can do. So I think if Medupi and other come to stream, we'll have that capacity. The other issues that we like to touch on, briefly speaking, the issues raised, PAP. Well, I remember we are now, I hope in the next 5-6 months we can announce the plans for PAP. We have gone beyond planning. We are now talking with the city of Tshwane, and they were talking with some people, developer, PPP, to deliver PAP. So we hope that by 2016, PAP will be that cannot be my decision. I think it's as Honorable Sosana tried it in his previous life, and I don't think he succeeded. So you can, the chief can try to do that. And then, Chair, the ARF was raised. So what we'll do, Chair, and the issue raised by Honorable Jacobus, we'll give the portfolio committee a list of IRS programs and why those ARF programs. So we'll give you the list of the programs. And hope we can have a footnote why these programs we think are very necessary. Just to indicate that SADBA, in terms of SADBA, we have now, we're discussing with the Public Service Administration, DPSA, because ideally speaking, we're supposed to be gazetting now the SADBA. And then during the course of this year, to draft a bill that will rescind the African Renaissance Fund Act, and then we bring in the fund. So we have we start the fund for development cooperation. So we do hope, well, we hope that we can pass through the legal services at the Ministry of Public Service Administration, because once we pass that, then we go for government gazette. Then we can start to have that interface between PAP and so on. The other question that we wanted to refer to was the issue that was brought by Honorable Ilof and Honorable Davidson and Honorable, there were about three similar questions that relate to the participation or assisting or working together with the private sector, our companies. How do we facilitate their work? And how does it relate that to opening up of a mission and priorities that Rabbi Davidson was talking about? Do we have a priorities? And I think it was also brought by, since we're hitting all over the show. We have never worked like that, honorable members. From 1994, we have never worked. We have not been all over the show. We have always prioritized, move on, stabilize. Prioritize, move on, and stabilize. Of course, I think we should take to heart as we do the 2020 review next day of 20 years, whether really we need all these missions as we reprioritize, because the budget is not increasing. Can you say without doubt that every mission is worth the investment we are putting in? I think the question that I heard from a few honorable members of this. Two, are we helping our companies? Now, there is an emerging South African Inc. There is a thing called economic cluster where we take part, peace and security. And we're saying that until we work together, South African companies, government, will not have an impact on the work we do elsewhere. So we meet regularly and try to see with the private sector your needs. We have the discussion with the Standard Bank, Old Mutual. What are your priorities going forward? I was in a meeting where we even have retail companies. Where are you going? Because this is where we are as the DIRCO, in Africa in particular. Mr. Price was there. Where do you want to open? Because our role is not to look into the local legislation and the local tendencies and say, if you want to be there, this is approach that we suggest. So there is a very good interaction between us, the private sector. But DTI is taking a lead. However, DTI is not in 126 missions, it's in 34 missions. So the bulk work of interface is with DIRCO. So we have that. We talk with BUSA, Business Africa, Handel Institute, with all of them, to say, if you don't talk with us, but please make sure you talk with our embassy. We have a lot of them on our discussion, chair. So can I ask maybe Ramachal to respond to one or two questions? And then what we'll try to do, Chair, we'll try to provide information on those other questions that we were not able to answer because of time. I'm sorry, Chair. Thank you.
That's fine. You have 2 minutes to just touch on issues here and there, too. And then we'll have to close the meeting.
No, thanks, Chair. The part that I was focused on is the property, but the disposal of the property that we have in Namibia. We have restarted the process because the mandate in terms of the government immovable asset in terms of Guyama is the responsibility for the final disposal is with Public Works. So what we have done, we have then went back to the market so that we can initiate the process to get bidders and able to then liaise with Public Works to finally dispose the property. And the
we have empty properties still in Berlin, in Zurich, standing. So you asked about other properties, so we still have other properties. We're waiting for the Public Works to still Namibia to dispose them of.
Now the project in Washington is on track. It's within the budget. In terms of the construction, the completion date is around about September when the property will be finalized. So the issue of the alignment with priorities, we try to do that. Just that within the limited resources, it's very difficult to have a plan that is not moving. The issue of the leases, will take that and we'll work and see how best in terms of the cost effectiveness in the way the leases are done. In terms of the last part, which I want to indicate, that the administrative in terms of spending, this is where our properties were and we had some challenges in the finalization of the implementation of our network infrastructure for the ICT, so which we have then now adopted the strategic plan and as well as the implementation plan to see how do we rehabilitate our infrastructure for the communication. So that is the area that is noted. And the reduction in the budget for public diplomacy is basically for the projects that we manage, which are once off. When now we start the new year, those non-recurring are removed from the baseline. So it's basically has to do with the diaspora contract. It has to do with the African Cup of Nations, where we receive additional funding from National Treasury. Thank you.
Chair, last thing on Zimbabwe, and I will add, we're going to give you the plan. Normally, we finance elections from ARF funds. African Resistance Fund, because there is no fund in the... So we normally go to ARF. All SADC election observations are funded from the ARF fund. So we're just working out the durations. Once you are aware, when elections in Zimbabwe, how many people will be going first phase, second phase, we're going to have a close interaction with the chair to see how we manage that process and the speaker. Once you know that, we'll present a budget, but it's going to be from the ARF funds. That's where we're going to get the funds from.
No, that's fine. That's fine. PG and your team, thank you so much. Of course, there are outstanding questions. I would prefer, DG, that you respond to them in writing so that if, because we still have time towards the budget vote, if there's a need to call you again for some, we can then do so on the basis of the responses that you, because that might even negate you coming, you know, having to come again. But thank you so much, DG, and your team. Thank you, honorable members and our guests, and the meeting is adjourned.
Isn't it enough?